When they say the science is settled, you should just take it as a fact and call it a day. But some, with rebellious minds, refuse to take the settling of science as a fact. And with them in mind, we pause to ask, is the weed-killing herbicide glyphosate safe to eat?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Ushuaia who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I'm Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with flight engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Folks, they say the science is settled on the weed-killing herbicide glyphosate. It is safe to eat. And that is a good thing, because most all of us have been eating glyphosate. It's in our food, in our air and water, it's in our blood, it's in tissue, and in our bones. But wait, some are coming forward to take issue with the settling of the glyphosate science. They ask, is the weed-killing herbicide glyphosate safe to eat? And so in the interest of hearing both sides of the story and perhaps learning a bit more about the weed killer that we have taken into our bodies, let's give a listen to how the science of glyphosate was settled. Here to guide us through the maze of conflicting science, we have Carrie Gillum, who is the author of Whitewash, the story of a weed killer, cancer, and the corruption of science. Carrie, welcome to the Food Chain.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Pleased to have you aboard. Senior correspondent for Reuters, covering big business in the big cities, and they sent you to Kansas?
Yes, and I'll tell you, I was not thrilled about it at first, you know, and but I came to love food and farming and came to feel it was the most important topic I could cover.
And why did you, what did it take for you to come to that realization that's where it all starts, is food and farming?
Right. Well, I mean, it does, right? And it affects all of us because we all eat, of course. And I had been covering the banking industry for many years and thought that was, you know, super important. But really, as I started spending time with the farmers in their fields, which I did a lot of, as well as with the companies like Monsanto and Dow and DuPont and those who were influencing the seed and the chemical side of farming, you know, I learned a lot and I became pretty passionate about the topic.
Mm-hmm. Well, and very early on, you started working with Monsanto, correct?
Right. Yes. Uh-huh. In 1998.
So in those days, Monsanto was coming out with an entirely new way of going about the industry of farming and with respect to herbicides, and then beyond that, genetically modified crops that would withstand those herbicides.
Right. Monsanto, you know, had at that time glyphosate, which is the key ingredient in Roundup. It's a very popular herbicide that had been on the market since 1974. But the patent was expiring in 2000, so in the mid-1990s, Monsanto introduced Roundup Ready crops, these different types of crops that could be sprayed directly with glyphosate. They were altered to be tolerant of the weed killer. And, of course, farmers, you know, loved that. It made their job so much easier, and glyphosate sales took off. And we really saw expanded use of that weed killer after these crops were introduced. And Monsanto, you know, was rewarded with a very significant market share, you know, gains in that expanded use.
Do you have any idea how much money came out of that discovery of GMOs, of genetically modified crops?
Oh, gosh. I mean, Monsanto makes billions of dollars a year, you know, from its genetically altered crops, as well as from its glyphosate-based herbicides. And Monsanto is only one company now. More than 50 companies now use glyphosate in their products. You know, it's a multi-billion dollar a year baby, for sure, this weed killer is.
Give us a thumbnail, then. You spoke about talking with farmers out in the field. Give us a thumbnail of what impact this technology has had on the way they go about farming.
Sure. Well, you know, early on, when I would speak with farmers, again, they would tell me how wonderful this was, how it made their work more efficient, more effective, how they could treat their fields more safely than using some of the older herbicides that, of course, couldn't be sprayed directly on crops and were themselves very dangerous, known to be very toxic. So Roundup, and used over Roundup Ready crops, was a godsend for many farmers. They loved it. Now, what happened over time, that changed. Farmers used it so much that weeds became resistant and weren't dying like they used to. And so over the years, you saw farmers then having to use two or three times more glyphosate. So it's not so cost effective anymore. And now we're at a point where farmers, of course, can't just use glyphosate in many areas of the country. They're having to combine it with dicamba and 2,4-D. And we're really just on a pesticide treadmill here, trying to fight back Mother Nature with, you know, ever greater doses of chemicals.
But the fact is that these technologies have allowed farmers to, instead of walking in the field with a hoe, to ride around in a tractor, an air-conditioned one, with stereo. And it made them really happy. And it allowed like one farmer can grow 1,000 acres of crops now with no weeds or bugs. Wow.
Right. I mean, it really was instructive and transformative for modern agriculture. But as I said, and as I've, you know, been pointing out, sometimes too much of a good thing isn't always a good thing. And, you know, weed scientists and agronomists around the world actually warned of the problems that could come from this reliance, this over-reliance on this one chemical and monocropping and sort of a discontinuation of time-honored traditional practices like, you know, crop rotation and cover cropping and more biodiversity in our farming. We've lost a lot of that because of our reliance on this chemical.
What about you, Carrie Gillen? Did you have a personal epiphany one day when you woke up to the fact that something is not quite right here?
Well, you know, people have asked me that, and I don't know that I had an epiphany necessarily, but I certainly became aware that this wasn't about farmers and this wasn't about feeding the world. When Monsanto was trying to roll out a Roundup Ready wheat, you know, it worked for years and was ready to introduce a wheat that was also designed to be sprayed directly with Roundup. And the farmers didn't want it, and the export markets didn't want it, and nobody wanted it really except Monsanto. And they pushed and pried, and, you know, I mean, they worked so hard to try to force this down the throat of farmers, and it was just rejected. And Monsanto ultimately shelved it in 2004, I believe it was. And that very clearly demonstrated to me, this is not market-driven, this is not demand-driven, this is profit-driven by a corporation who, you know, sees a lot of money in pushing this chemical.
Well, part of the title of your book has to do with the corruption of science, which to me, you know, when somebody tells me the science on this is settled, I always get frightened, because what they're telling me is, shut up. Whatever you think has nothing to do with anything, because the science is settled, and that's that. And that's Monsanto's specialty, it seems to me. When people raise objections to the fact that we're all consuming glyphosate, they say it's okay, it's safe to eat. The science is settled. I'd like to pick that up and kind of follow it a little bit, if we might. Have to take a break here in a little while, but we can get started here. The notion that we can have a chemical or a crop, a genetically modified crop, which can be infused with a pesticide and drenched in an herbicide, we can use these things to kill insects, we can use them to kill weeds, and yet it's okay for us to eat. It, like you said, it just seems too good to be true, and yet Monsanto says they have the science to prove it. How does Monsanto go about settling science?
Well, and you're right, exactly. That term is one that they have used over and over. And it's not just Monsanto, but also the rest of the agrochemical industry that has this, you know, talking point and this propaganda. But what it is, you look at dietary exposure, as you're referring to, but there's also, of course, occupational exposure, mm-hmm. people who are exposed to it by using it in their lawns and gardens or spraying it on their farm fields or that sort of thing.
Can you hold that thought, Carrie? We have to take a quick break, darn. But we will be right back, and we're going to talk about how companies like Monsanto settle science so that you and I have no argument about what they have to present with us, which in this case is glyphosate, the herbicide that kills weeds. Right back.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro Farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it, Metro Farm it. You can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it, Metro Farm it.
Learn how to dream it, build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it, Metro Farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it, earn it, own it, Metro Farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it, Metro Farm it. Dream it, build it, own it. It's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it. And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour, with Carrie Gillum, who is the author of Whitewash, the story of a weed killer, cancer, and the corruption of science, talking about how companies like Monsanto settle science so that we have nothing to say about the efficacy and safety of what they're trying to feed us. And, you know, Carrie, as I was reading your book, Whitewash, and kind of clicking through the methods with which Monsanto uses to tamp things down, I got to thinking, you know, this all sounds very familiar, these techniques that they're using to settle science. And it came to me that it's really quite similar to Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. And so I printed them up, and yes, pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. Does that sound like something Monsanto does?
Definitely. Yes, definitely. Yeah. I mean, as you, you know, referred to, there are many strategies, and we've learned this primarily through Monsanto's own internal documents that have come out through litigation, as well as through Freedom of Information documents, thousands of those that we've obtained. And what you see very clearly is decades of effort to manipulate science that is on the record out there about the safety of this chemical. There are, of course, independent scientists from around the world who have done research and raised red flags and said, this looks like it causes cancer, or this looks like it causes kidney disease, or we have found links to non-Hodgkin lymphoma in epidemiology studies. I mean, they go on and on and on and on. Yet Monsanto has always countered those.
Mm-hmm. Before you go on, Carrie, how exactly did you get your fingers on all of that inside information from Monsanto?
So again, we have both Freedom of Information documents that we've obtained through the EPA as well as FDA and USDA, and you can see correspondence back and forth between mm-hmm. the regulators and the company, as well as the company's lobbyists. And then we also have discovery documents that are filed in the courts, in federal court and state courts, through these lawsuits in which plaintiffs suing Monsanto alleging Roundup caused their cancers have obtained millions of pages. And I've spent a lot of my time reading through all these documents and posting them and cataloging them. And you know, it gives you a headache, but it really tells a dark and twisted tale of intentional deceit. There's really no other way to demonstrate it. You know, the public stated comments are in direct contradiction to the internal discussions that you see surrounding this chemical.
And so they say one thing, so they say the science is settled. And since the science is settled, we should all just sit back and enjoy our cup of glyphosate. And it'll be okay. It's safe to eat. But even Monsanto's internal documents, they don't back that up?
Well, the dietary exposure is a whole nother realm in addition to the occupational. And yes, they maintain, and the agrochemical industry maintains, that residues of this weed killer and the other pesticides that are in your foods are nothing to worry about, that it's fine, that, you know, it's not going to cause you any problems. Now, medical professionals and researchers say that's crazy, and that we need much more research, and we need biomonitoring to determine that. And some of what we've seen so far, trying to track glyphosate in urine, for instance, has been correlated to health problems, like one doctor in Indiana tracking pregnant women measured levels of this weed killer in their urine and found the higher the level of the weed killer, the worse the birth outcome for the baby. Chlorpyrifos, another pesticide that's on our food, has been tracked to neurodevelopmental brain problems, you know, brain development problems in children. And all these pesticides are in our foods, and we know that primarily because of government testing as well as private academic testing. Glyphosate's been found even in honey, organic honey, and in baby food, oatmeal products, for instance.
We did a radio show some time ago with a physician at University of San Francisco Med School who tested urine and found glyphosate in the urine, I think, of 96% of the samples tested from around the United States. 96%?
Yeah. I mean, tests have been done all over the world, quite, you know, a number of them in Europe as well, and it is very commonly found. A research paper published, I believe it was just last week, it was published in October by University of California, San Diego researchers found that, you know, they estimated about a 500% increase in exposure to glyphosate. And they've been tracking people and tracking the urine, weed killer in their urine for about 20 years. And they've said, you know, it used to be in just a fraction of the people, and now it's in over 70% of the people they look at.
And I believe the reason they attribute that to, that it tremendous increase to, was not only the fact that farmers are using glyphosate to kill weeds in spring, but they're also using glyphosate on some key foundation crops as a desiccant to increase ripening. And so when they spray it later in the season on fully ripe seeds, the chances of us consumers picking up the glyphosate is, you know, much greater than if they spray it in the spring.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's sort of the interesting thing. These crops like wheat and oats and barley are not genetically altered. But Monsanto has some marketing materials that are, you know, encourage farmers to spray it on these crops very shortly before harvest to, as you said, desiccate it or sort of even out their harvest potential. And what researchers have found is that residues are much higher than, you know, for if you spray it on wheat, then you find it in the flour and you find it in the products made with that flour. And the oats is particularly worrisome because the oats are not as processed necessarily as maybe wheat and other things. So you're finding high levels in oatmeal that you feed to your kid.
Well, okay, so let's dive into this whole notion of settling science. You outline a couple of profound examples of the settling business in your book, Whitewash. Now, like the first one I'd like to pick up is the Seralini study, because when I first saw the photographs of Seralini's rats, I thought, oh, this can't be true. So would you give us a thumbnail of the Seralini study and what he was going for there?
Sure. Sure. Now, Seralini's a French scientist, and he's actually, you know, published more than one study. He's been looking at glyphosate, Roundup, and GMO crops for a number of years, and he has a team, of course, that he works with. But in 2012, he published a paper that really rocked the world and got a lot of international press and attention, and he had fed, it was a two-year-long feeding study of rats, and they, you know, were given both GMO corn and Roundup, and he tracked the results, and the results were, you know, horrendous, and showed potential endocrine disrupting, you know, which are hormonal changing properties from Roundup, and a number of other problems. And Monsanto, you know, immediately challenged it. And you can see through the documents where they basically orchestrated sort of an international outcry against Seralini and a demand that his paper be retracted. And they talk in the documents that they don't want people to know that they're behind it. They want it to look like this is sort of an authentic, you know, outcry, when in actuality they're communicating and they're telling people what to say and they're trying to pull it all together and they're communicating with it. And then we also find that they had a consulting contract with the editor of the journal. And then you find out that a former Monsanto scientist who's still getting money from Monsanto goes to sit on the editorial board of this journal. And then mysteriously the paper is actually retracted. So,
so it's kind of like Rules for Radicals, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they still maintain that there's nothing, you know, untoward, you know, happened with that. But
we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, Carrie, I'd like to talk about the difference between the Seralini study of rats and Monsanto's study of rats. Both studied the same kind of rats, fed them the same kind of food, but one was a short-term study, the other a long-term study. And oh my goodness, the difference. We will be right back with Carrie Gillum, and stay tuned.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with Carrie Gillum, the author of Whitewash, the story of a weed killer. This case, glyphosate, cancer, and the corruption of science. Going back to the Seralini study, as I understand it, Carrie, Monsanto did the same study with the rats. But I think it was like they fed the rats for 90 days. And I think Seralini was thinking, well, okay, so nothing shows in 90 days. But what if you do a long-term study? And when he did a lifelong study of these rats, they pretty much all came out with huge tumors. And, of course, he took pictures of the before and after and whatnot. And there before your eyes, you could see the consequence of this long-term study. And as you said, it rocked the world, did it not?
It certainly got a lot of attention around the world and brought great scrutiny to the safety of both the GMO corn and Roundup weed killer. You know, he was saying he showed that the study basically showed links to liver and kidney disease and then, you know, mammary tumors, and basically showed evidence that these could be an endocrine disruptor, which is, you know, which is the great fear associated with certain pesticides.
And of course, this study, you know, overturned everything. People looked at it and said, oh my goodness, this is real stuff here. We have to do something. And then what did Monsanto do?
Right. Well, as I said, they orchestrated, you know, quite an outcry, organized and encouraged a number of scientists from around the world to write letters and make demands for a retraction and to criticize the Seralini study. And they did all this trying to make it look as though they were not behind that.
What is the relationship between Monsanto and science?
And science?
Yeah, and well, scientists, I should say.
Right. Well, one of the other things, you know, that we've seen and that I talk about in Whitewash is that they have sort of two different levels. One I call a sort of secret army or secret soldiers, who are scientists around the world who are getting money or other sorts of support from Monsanto and the agrochemical industry, and then collaborate with Monsanto on their presentations and their policy papers. They lobby on behalf of Monsanto with regulators and lawmakers, but they never disclose. There's no disclosure. In fact, all the collaborations and connections are kept secret. And so you see that with a large network of people. And then you have sort of a more upper tier scientists that Monsanto, you know, works with and pays essentially to do, to put out published papers peer-reviewed journals, who again have these connections and are sometimes being ghostwritten by Monsanto. That's, we've seen that in the documents where they discuss the various papers that they have ghostwritten that they present to regulators. So, you know, they pay, we see where they pay a pathologist to come in and reverse the findings that the EPA has come up with showing toxic effects of Roundup. I mean, it goes on and on and on, but they have their fingers in every piece of science that has anything to do with glyphosate, it seems.
Does Henry Miller ring true? Do you have you familiar with that name?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's one who basically was caught through these documents. He had been publishing articles in Forbes and other places, and we found through the documents that Monsanto wrote them for him, you know. but again, he's only one. I mean, we've seen that with many others as well. So
Monsanto actually writes the articles and hands them to the scientists and say, tweak it a little bit and then sign your name to it and we'll give you this money.
Well, yes. I mean, the documents don't say we'll give you, not with Henry Miller at least, not the ones I've seen, don't say we'll give you this money. They just said, would you do this for us? And he said, sure. And he said, but I'm not, you know, I don't have enough time really to work on anything. And they say, don't worry, we'll write it up, we'll send you a draft. And then they do. And then it appears in Forbes, almost identical to the way that Monsanto wrote it. And as I said, we've seen this. There's another scientist who the PR team for Monsanto wrote something for him and told him he could tweak it. But when you compare the draft to what appeared under his name, it was word for word. So, you know, this goes on and people don't understand it and they think it's independent and authentic, and it's not.
What did they do to Seralini?
What did they do to him? Well, yeah. I mean, they worked very hard to discredit him, to discredit his work, attacked him personally, attacked the people who work with him. And you've seen this again. They did the same with a scientist in Argentina. They've done the same with these international, highly esteemed scientists working for the International Agency for Research on Cancer. They've attacked these people, even though they're completely independent and have no monetary ties whatsoever to the issue.
So Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radical, number five, ridicule is man's most potent weapon. There is no defense. It's irrational. It's infuriating. It also works as a key pressure point to force the enemy into concessions. And so that's what they do. They ridicule.
They ridicule, they create false narratives. They've created a couple that have been published in Reuters recently. Monsanto approached Reuters, they did with some other reporters as well, with a particular narrative and presented the Reuters reporter with some documents and got the desired story that they wanted and proceeded to buy Google ads and issue press releases. And the gist of the article was that this International Agency for Research on Cancer discounted some very important scientific data when it looked at glyphosate. And nowhere in the story does it mention that that very important scientific data was generated by Monsanto-paid scientists, you know, which is sort of a key point that you think should be in a story, but it wasn't. And it leaves the impression that they were discounting, you know, authentic, independent information.
What was your relationship when you covered Monsanto, when you walked into the Monsanto headquarters there in St. Louis and knocked on the door and, I'm Carrie and I'm here?
Well, I mean, they were very, you know, it depends on who you're working with at the time, but I had mostly a very pleasant working relationship with them for a number of years. I spent a lot of time with some of their top executives, and they spent a lot of time trying to instruct me and help me understand their business. Mm-hmm. But as I became more knowledgeable and broadened my source base and spent time talking to other scientists and agronomists and farmers, I realized that their narrative wasn't always the most authentic narrative. And then they turned on me, essentially, and just started working to discredit me as well.
So ridicule you too, then?
Ridicule.
Did you feel like you were part of a club then?
Well, I feel like it's a good club. I mean, they've gone after the New York Times and, numerous other journalists as well as scientists. So.
Well, okay, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I'd like to ask Carrie about the second huge and probably earth-shaking public relations fiasco that Monsanto faces, and that's, of course, the International Agency for Research on Cancer's declaration that glyphosate is a probable cause of cancer. How do you get out of that one? This is the Food Chain Radio Program, Michael Olson with Carrie Gillum, and we will be right back after these very important messages, so please do stay tuned.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box, a heavily constructed, portable, elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to knoxgardenbox.com. That's K-N-O-X, gardenbox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
We're on the farm with Joel Salatin.
Would you like to buy homemade soup, backyard chicken, and the neighbor's artisanal lunch meat? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund protects your right to acquire the food of your choice from the source of your choice. I'm Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm, and I urge you to defend the right of neighbors to engage in direct food commerce. Join today at farmtoconsumer.org. The food of your choice from the source of your choice. That's farmtoconsumer.org. Farmtoconsumer.org. Thank you.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place aboard the USS Dale at Guam, 15 August 1945.
When word came through that the war had ended, everyone went wild. We made noise with whatever we could get our hands on. Sirens shrieked, bells rang, horns bellowed, sailors whooped and hollered. I was the wildest of all because when I first went in the Navy, I read you had to do everything you could to keep your head and nerves together so you could survive to the end. Well, I held myself together almost 4 years aboard that tin can, and I made it through to the end. Yes, I celebrated. I whooped and I hollered and I banged on metal. You bet I did. And I celebrated a bunch for all those guys that couldn't, too.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. talesfromatincan.com.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. We're talking about Monsanto's glyphosate, a weed killer that makes it possible for one farmer to grow 1,000 acres of crops with no weeds and no bugs. Can you imagine how incredible that is for farmers? I once had an occasion to sit on a panel before the International Biotech Convention in Chicago. And on the panel with me were members of the president of the Corn Growers Association, the soy people, and the hog growers, and you know, the principal people of America's agriculture were sitting there on that panel with me. And why I got there, I'm not sure. But when it came to, for me to give my concluding thoughts, I just said, you know, to the audience of genetic engineers from all the big companies, I said, you guys have a miraculous technology, and you've made all of the people on this panel very happy because now you've made farming easy for them, and you've made yourself fortunes doing it. So you have every right to hold your head high and be very proud. But someday soon, consumers are going to come to you and say, hey, wait a minute. What's in this technology for us other than food that has been drenched in herbicides and infused with pesticides? Carrie Gillen, are you one of those people going to agriculture and asking that question?
I'm asking, I've asked a lot of questions over the years, and I probably will continue to do so till the day I die. You know, that's the job of a journalist, to seek mm-hmm. the truth, right?
To seek the truth. So the IARC, International Agency for Research on Cancer, a organization of the World Health Organization and the United Nations, I believe. Is that true?
Yeah. This is a working group. They bring in scientists from around the world. So it's not, they're not on staff. These are people who basically do the work for free and come in when called upon to analyze these different chemicals.
And in the examination, what they do is they do a meta study of published work, right?
So they have toxicology experts.
Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, okay,
here.
Good. We had a little break in the transmission, but we're back.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So what they do is they look at the relevant published peer-reviewed literature. They look at the research that is available in the public realm, and they analyze that to try to determine if the particular chemical, what category it might fall into. And with glyphosate, they found what they said was sufficient evidence of the experimental research that had been done on animals, and they found limited evidence for the epidemiology, the exposure research done on humans, and they said they found very strong evidence for the mechanistic data, which is really looking at DNA damage, studies of real-world exposure, people who were exposed to glyphosate, and they found DNA damage with these people. And they said it all added up to what they called a 2A, which is probably carcinogenic. Not enough to say it's definitely, but more than possibly. So they said probably. And it's interesting to know that Monsanto, in its internal documents before IARC-NET, predicted. They said, we are vulnerable with the science, and we predict that IARC will either have a 2A, a probably, or a 2B, a possibly, finding. So,
wow.
You know, the science is definitely out there, and these scientists are, as I said, they're considered among the elite around the world and have no financial ties whatsoever.
It must have been a job to find some scientists without financial ties to Monsanto.
They pulled like Aaron Blair, who was the chairman of the working group. He'd spent his career really, you know, with the National Cancer Institute and really working, you know, as a public scientist, public health scientist. And they found them from around the world, Australia and Italy and, you know, other countries, and brought them together.
So these are good people. Now, the Monsanto went to the Environmental Protection Agency for help fighting this, right?
They did. You can see in the documents that they issued, they sent the EPA talking points after IARC came out. They wanted the EPA's help in killing a similar review that was going to be done by the ATSDR, which is over in the Health and Human Services Department, and they got that killed. They got the EPA to help them, got that to go away. And we saw a very cozy relationship between certain EPA officials and Monsanto.
Well, it always helps, I guess, if you're going up against a World Health Organization study that claims your principal product is a probable cause of cancer. What did California do?
Right. Well, so California moved and listed glyphosate as a known carcinogen that has to carry warning language on labels containing, you know, of products containing glyphosate. Monsanto sued California. They were unable to stop California, but they are, proceeding with their litigation. And hoping to have some impact. They've convinced some lawmakers in the United States Congress to press the World Health Organization and to move to try to strip some funding from the International Agency for Research on Cancer. And they've tried their very best to smear the reputation of Aaron Blair, the National Cancer Institute scientist, who was the chairman of the working group.
Right back to Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, right? Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson. We're going to take one more quick break. Got so much to talk about, so little time to talk about it in. Stay tuned.
So much to say, so little time to say it on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
We are back. Food Chain radio program. Michael Olson with Kerry Gillum. Now, what will happen if people look at the truth behind, or what the settling of this science about the efficacy and safety of glyphosate? What if people start saying, this is trouble, this is big trouble, we have to stop using it? What impact would that have, Kerry Gillum, on agriculture, on the heartland, on food production throughout the world?
Right. Well, it would have an immediate financial impact, certainly on the companies that sell it, you know, notably Monsanto and others. The farmers, you know, farmers have largely told me they think glyphosate is on its way out anyway, at least in North America, because it's not as effective as it used to be. It's not working like it once did. Farmers, as we talked about earlier, are having to turn to alternative herbicides already, like dicamba and 2,4-D. And the chemical companies have developed dicamba-tolerant crops, 2,4-D-tolerant crops, and are encouraging farmers to use these chemicals in combination with glyphosate. And, of course, the scientists and agronomists all say, well, you're going to have the same thing happen that happened with glyphosate. Weeds are going to become resistant. This stuff isn't going to work forever. So, you know, moving away from glyphosate is not necessarily something that people need to choose or not choose. It's happening by virtue of Mother Nature, you know, refusing to bend to its will anymore, really.
And there it is. But then dicamba, 2,4-D, are these, I guess, what is this? Has the science on those been settled as well?
Well, they are generally considered to be more dangerous than glyphosate. 2,4-D was an ingredient in Agent Orange. People have a range of concerns about the impact on human health and environmental health as well. So, you know, farmers are not facing easy choices, and farmers never do. And that's one thing I say in the book. I have the utmost regard for farmers. They really are on the front lines. And if they're choosing, you know, agriculture with pesticides, they're endangering themselves, and they know they are. And I mean, we know that. Our government, everyone does. Pesticides can be very dangerous when you're exposed to them, especially repeatedly like farmers are. So, you know, it's all a balancing of risk and reward, and really having to be informed about, you know, the different chemicals and what you need to do to protect yourself, and if it's really worth
worth Amen. It. Oh, your thoughts on the settling of science when somebody like, you know, big company like Monsanto looks out across the land and hears people complaining and they say, just shut up. The science has been settled. Do you think the science is ever settled?
in anything? I mean, I don't know. I guess, would we say it's settled with tobacco and lung cancer? Probably a lot of people would say that. And with asbestos and PCBs, I mean, what you're seeing with glyphosate is what you've seen in other industries and with other chemicals. You know, decades and decades, a company proclaims the safety and argues that the science is settled until the evidence comes out that it's not. And I mean, that's where I think we are now with glyphosate. There's too much independent research out there showing, you know, evidence of harm, human health as well as environmental. And it can't be hidden forever.
Well, not with people like you running around, that's for sure. Folks, Carrie Gillum is her name. Whitewash, the story of a weed killer, cancer, and the corruption of science. Nice piece of journalism, and congratulations. It's good to see somebody taking on power and telling the truth as you see it. Thank you so much, Carrie.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends miss the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.